Triple M rocks the NRL 24/7 through the Triple M app. Thanks to Ream. Steady, hot and strong. Install a Ream.
Saturdays were made for this. The biggest names and the biggest games. Right here.
Woo! For King G, where comfort is king.
2, 3, 4. Hey, ho, let's go.
Triple M rocks the NRL.
Welcome to the Triple M Saturday Scrum.
Yes, happy Tony Bill Williams Day, everybody. Lovely to have your company on this Saturday afternoon. Nathan Brown, Emma Lawrence, Ryan Girdle, Tony Squires, spending the next 3 hours ahead of kickoff, the Bulldogs and the Gold Coast Titans, ANZ Stadium. But a lot of attention has turned to the game later in the evening, GIO Stadium, 7:35. The Raiders and the Roosters, with Sonny Bill Williams making his return. I noted I was just looking through the newspapers today, old school, the actual, you know, the paper ones. Mm-hmm. Both the Sydney Morning Herald and the Daily Telegraph, for combined 16 photographs of Sonny Bill Williams. It's huge, isn't it, that he's back?
It's great to have him back in the game, and what a moment for him to come back. Grand final rematch down there, GIO Stadium. The Roosters getting a lot of personnel back, and the Raiders starting to hit some form at the right time. He might only play a minor role in today's game, but the back end of the season, we'll see a lot more of him, and I think everyone's looking forward to that. I am, anyway.
And it's also Josh Morris playing his 300th game in the NRL too, but unfortunately for Josh,
Sonny Bill's 10 minutes is more.
Yes. Jeez, can't speak my words out. It's only, 2 minutes in. But, Sonny Bill Williams, it's been, for the last couple of weeks, absolutely dominating the headlines everywhere. I mean, obviously, even just, for example, with Channel 10, we have a whole 10 minutes of sport. But even all of the news directors and earlier in the bulletin, they're big on Sonny Bill. Even if you're not a footy fan, They know who Sonny Bill is. They might not be able to name another player in the Rooster side, but everyone knows Sonny Bill Williams. So I think it's good for the game. It's good for the Roosters. And, perfect match for grand final rematch.
A big Sonny Bill fan myself. Glad he's playing rugby league again. Love watching him from, I'll never forget, the first time I saw him play, he was 17. Steve Price said to me, the old Dragons coach, he was coaching the flag, and he kept an eye on all the 16s and 18s or the 17s and 19s end of all the other clubs. And he goes, there's this kid at Canterbury, Sonny Bill Williams. He goes, you need to watch him. And what a player he's been, and what a person.
Yeah. I think that's something else about that's so intriguing. Tony's just charismatic guy. He's a character that just people, you know, he sells papers. People want to know what he's up to. I think he inspires a lot of different people. And the way that I think he just carried himself through all the turbulent times and all through the different sporting careers or paths that he's taken needs to be commended.
He's a very humble guy too, isn't he? For everything he's achieved, I think there's a lot some of the younger players coming through the game can learn off him. I think... Yeah. You know, you can tell he sees that it's a privilege to be in this position. You know, he doesn't take it for granted. And, I think he's a role model for all of these younger players coming through.
There's a lot of distractions in there for young players. Yeah. You know, whether it can be social media, social drugs. There's lots of things that can lead a young player who's got money astray. And I think from what you understand with Sonny has a great impact on a lot of the younger players because of the way he chooses to live his life. And that's probably undervalued with a lot of people.
Did you have anything to do with him, Brownie, back in the day? Anthony Mundine, you played footy with, and he was, Sonny Bill Williams' right-hand man for a while?
Yeah, no, never really. I knew Sonny to say hello to, like when you're coaching against, you sort of walk past, always say hello. But I actually had a week with the All Blacks about 2 years ago, and in that I sort of got to sit down and have a good couple of chats with him, So he's an interesting character, and as I said, I think any time there's someone of Sonny Bill Williams' ability, one, and then probably more importantly, what he does away from the game, and he brings nothing but good publicity, and I just think it's great for the game and for the Roosters to have a player like that coming off their bench for 20, 25 minutes. What a thing for them.
Do we know what his actual situation is for 2021? Because we know, we're not sure what ended up happening with the Wolfpack, because they folded there for a while. I'm not sure whether they were deregistered.
Well, they're out of this season of the...
So I wonder what his situation is.
They're trying there's some new people over there that are trying to put a pitch to take over the ownership of that club. That's where they're at the moment. Now, whether the game in England will allow them back in or what, I'm not too sure because of how it sort of unfolded. But obviously the coronavirus had a much bigger impact on the previous owner, who's now not an owner, I believe. So
he'd be a pretty good fit for the Warriors.
Oh, mate, Sonny Bill.
Imagine, Brad, if you were able, like if he was off contract at the end of the year and was looking for an opportunity, obviously somewhere, the influence he could have on that group that have just shown so much improvement over the last couple of months.
Any club he helps, doesn't matter. I mean,
would that be something you could potentially look at?
Oh, you'd always look at any time there's a good player like that on the market, if available, you're not doing your job if you don't look at it.
But could you see him going anywhere but the Roosters?
No, really? No, I can't see
with the,
it,
the relationship he's got with Nick Politis and
yep, I think that's not going to happen.
I mean, he'd be lovely, but I can't really see him in any other jersey.
If he plays, he'd be playing with the Roosters. Yeah.
What may be interesting this evening is, remember when he came back last time, was it 2013, the first involvement he had was Sam Burgess taking the ball up and just colliding into him.
What about Gerge trying to get a scoop out of me there too?
I know, it's good, isn't it?
I think it's a perfect fit, mate. I think it'd be a great thing for where the game's headed in New Zealand at the moment. I mean, there's so much positivity around the Warriors and what they've been able to achieve at the back end of this season.
This is the Redcliffe Warriors you're talking about.
Yeah, it's just I think it's a perfect fit. I think the organisation and the players need a guy like that. And as you said, most organisations do, just for a period of time. The influence he could have over those younger, talented guys, especially, you know, being a New Zealand legend, I think it'd be a great fit, Randy.
This time last week we come in off the back of the Dragons having lost. Mm-hmm. Tone was down in the dumps. Yeah. The Dragons haven't played. Look at he's got a spring in his step.
There's still a chance.
He's got a spring in his step.
So you see, he did
some Wim Hof this morning down at Brody Pool, didn't you?
Yeah, I did.
A little bit of Wim Hof.
Have you given it a go yet?
Yeah, I love the Wim Hof. I'm not going the cold showers, but I'm going the cold water swim, which is, I think, just as good, isn't it?
Same thing.
Is it?
Yeah.
Okay.
Don't bag me for going in the cold water. It's very good. Very good for you. Do you think, though, this evening, as I was talking about Sam Burgess doing it tonight, the first collision, do you think when Sonny Bill comes on, I don't know what minute, maybe just 10 minutes before half time, I don't know, wherever it may be, do you think one, Josh Papali might be going, you know, whatever's happening, he wants to be on? I know he's a bit of a hero. Sonny Bill's a hero of Josh's, but the way he's playing, do you think he wants that big impact as well?
Well, Josh Papali is one of the form players in the competition. Probably if he's not the best front row in the world at the moment, he's in the top couple, isn't he? Along with, you know, the Roosters boys, and he's in the top couple. And he's basically come out and said he idolises the bloke he's playing against. Yeah, so I reckon out of respect he might run into the bloke next to Sonny.
I tell you who I reckon I could picture just running straight for him.
Okay.
John Bateman. Because he is a lunatic.
Good choice.
If I had to pick one of them in that forward pack, I'd pick Johnny Bateman.
Hudson Young also.
I reckon it'll be Tarponet. I reckon Tarponet likes to sort of
chop
down the big trees. Yeah. I think he'll be having a good shot. I mean, every one of those Raiders forwards will be itching just to get a little piece of Sonny Bill tonight. That's the way it should be.
Oh, it's going to be great.
Won't worry Sonny too much, I wouldn't imagine.
Okay, that's a game at 7:35 tonight. Obviously, there's a couple before that, including that you will hear right at 3 o'clock. The Bulldogs taken on the Gold Coast. If you haven't been aware of what's already happened last night anyway, looking at the Tyre Power scoreboard, the Knights over the Sharks, 38 points to 10. I'm going to get some controversy out of that game. We'll get there next. Then, of course, the big game, Storm and South Sydney, 22-16. The Storm got the job done, snuck up in the end. Really, Souths were playing really well for the start of the game, but the Storm do what they do best, just win games of rugby league. So much to get to today. Ryan Pappenhausen will join us. Andrew Abdo will join us. Brownie's got a terrific coach's corner as well. Sturlo joining us as well at 2 o'clock. It is huge. It is the Saturday Scrum, and we do it for King G. A little bit of Electric Light Orchestra to start us off this afternoon. This is the Saturday Scrum. All right, the Knights over the Sharks, 38 points to 10. Bad loss for the Sharkies. The Knights needed, obviously, a couple of wins as well. They're travelling okay. It was, I guess, the controversy. Do we know yet, Em, what's going to happen? Chad Townsend, as we know, was sent from the field on a shoulder charge. The referee said it was high as well. Before we get into that, because John Morris, the coach, spoke about it as well, Gerds, did you think it was a send-off, Chad Townsend?
We called the game yesterday, Tane. Mm-hmm. It was one of the most surprising things I've seen on the field in a long, long time. It kind of hard to make sense of it. And I think it was a reaction from the referee, and they had some time to look it up in the box. I thought it was an overreaction. I can see how people now are coming forward and saying that he needed to be sent off and he needed to do some time on the sidelines. I disagree. I didn't see the shoulder hit any part of the head. Kalen got up basically at the end of the game and said that he didn't get me. What made it look so bad is the fact that Kalen relaxed.
It was a blatant shoulder charge first.
And it was a shoulder charge, which is really weird because, you know, you don't see sort of Chad making those, going in for those sort of collisions usually anyway. I don't think there's too much in it, Tony. I think it looked a lot worse than what it actually was, and I don't think you'll get any time.
So the shoulder charge is it's an immediate sin should have
been
anyway.
Sent off. He should have done 10 in the bin maybe and then got on with the game.
But even watching it a few times, you don't really know whether the contact was on the head. So it may well have been on the head, even despite Kalen Ponga saying that.
Yeah,
despite him saying it, may well have been right, you know, flush on the chin. A lot of players, you know, don't want to give up for the other bloke. And the other thing that was made it look worse and made it actually worse, I think, is that the referee had told Kalen Ponga that, you know, go back to take the tap again. So he had, his body had relaxed.
It stopped. Yeah. He'd completely stopped.
And there was a jump from Chad Townsend.
That's the thing. He kind of launched himself, didn't he? It wasn't just like he was going for a tackle. It honestly was if he lifted his feet off the air and just sort of jumped shoulder first into Kalen Ponga.
Yeah. I'm happy with the send-off. What do you think, Brownie?
It was, I thought when it first happened, I thought he'll get sent off here because the thing was, Kalen was relaxed, the referee had stopped, and Kalen wasn't braced for any contact at all, was he?
No.
And it was, it's tough as it is on Chad Townsend, he'd probably look back at that one. For as clean a player as he is, he probably got that wrong. But I reckon send off sufficient, though. On with Gerds, like he's been sent off. You know, I'd happily let it go now, but I think he did deserve it more for the fact that Kalen wasn't ready for any contact. And that's the one thing that they've done for, I suppose, people like Kalen and the good halves in the game. They've stopped people bashing them when they're not ready for contact, you know, because Kalen just wasn't prepared for it because the referee got him to stop. So that made it look worse for me.
Yeah, I agree. Even coach John Morris wasn't super strong in terms of defending Chad Townsend. And this is what he had to say about that send-off.
Yeah, it's a shoulder charge. You know, there was force there. His arm was tucked. I'm not going to deny that. You know, whether it was a send-off, I'm not so sure. You know, maybe you could have stayed on the field, but, you know, rules are the rules. And, you know, I feel for Chaddy. I don't think he's ever even been sin-binned in his career, let alone sent off. And he's not one to play like that. But he was just trying to change the momentum of the game and shot off the line and just trying to make a tackle and obviously got it wrong. So, you know, no doubt he'll have a case to answer and we'll have to get a case together to defend him.
John Morris there. And he's right. It's not in his character, Chad Townsend, which made it even
They've got some issues, though, the Sharks. I mean, you talk about the Townsend issue. I think there was a couple of other guys, Rudolph and Graham, were put on report for lifting.
Yeah, Toby Rudolph.
Their contact was just off yesterday. What was going on?
I just think their defence, their attitude wasn't right. So therefore, when you're not hitting that hard and your shoulders aren't in, then you're looking for other ways to get guys on the ground. And they took the easy option yesterday. The Sharks are really disappointing after what was a great win against the Cowboys the week before and this new wave of young talent. And I think you're going to get that from time to time where you're not going to expect those guys to perform every week, but they really dropped their bundle yesterday. The younger guys and the older guys who, you know, need to be better on a weekly basis didn't perform. And the Knights come off that really poor loss against the Warriors and they were ready to go up there at home. It was a tough night out for the Sharks, but did their finals credentials, you know, it didn't make them look really good at all.
Yeah.
If anything, for the Sharks going forward, it probably isn't such a bad thing that Townsend was sent off because that actually does come into calculations with the charges, which haven't come out yet. And let's be honest, they were probably going to lose that game anyway at the point they were at. So you'd rather have Chad available for an extra week and have him missing for the rest of that game. So maybe not such a bad thing for the Sharks.
It had no bearing on the result, did it?
Yeah,
it might have been a bit closer, but the Knights were going to win the game. So being sent off in the end might work in his favour to come back. But I think, you know, John Morris has got some decisions to make. If Sean Johnson does come back, you know, this is probably the first year since Chad Townsend's been playing first grade. He's been a good, consistent player. But this year his form probably hasn't been where he'd like it to be. And the young blokes for Cronulla when they play in the halves, they seem to be very threatening, don't they?
Yeah.
You know, the young ones that they've got playing there, you know, and Connor Tracy come on yesterday.
Scored a good try.
And really got him going straight away again. You know, and Sean Johnson's, you know, been probably one of the better players in the competition this year, you know. So, you know, there's some of those young ones are definitely putting pressure on the more experienced players at Cronulla, especially in that sort of in those key positions.
Yeah. Well, as a few of us have said, there's a few issues there. I think a minibus to the judiciary on Tuesday night because there's quite a few of those players may well be on report. John Morris, not just speaking about Chad Townsend, but he talked about what it meant for the Sharks overall.
You know, I didn't think I'd be in this position to apologise to our fans, but I have to after that. It was so far outside the standards of what we set ourselves at the club. You know, we just didn't turn up tonight with the right attitude and absolutely got our pants pulled down and bum smacked in front of everyone, which is really disappointing for where we are in our season, you know, around 17, and, you know, we're still in the eight, but certainly after games like that, we don't deserve to be. It's, you know, Blake's got to have a real good hard look at himself. Yeah, it was an awful effort, mate.
Nice straight talking from the coach.
Yeah, look, I think if you look at the Sharks' form this year, any time they play a side that's a better defensive unit than them, they get beat. Any time they play a side that's flimsy defence, they put a score on them. They're a very, very good attacking side, but their defence doesn't hold up when they play a better opposition. And for Kalen Ponga, it was shell and peas last night, wasn't it?
It was, but what was impressive about Kalen Ponga last night was the fact that he did get hit a lot. He got, you know, monstered by those guys, yet he just kept backing up. He had the, you know, the nostrils full of
I'm surprised
cloth.
They didn't do the tape around the head.
Yeah, absolutely.
Because it wouldn't stop bleeding the whole game.
But he exhibited toughness.
Kalen Ponga's, there's no issue with Kalen Ponga's toughness. If you've watched him play as a younger kid and watched him come through the ranks, when you're playing as well as he plays, obviously he's always going to come in for extra treatment. And he's had plenty of games where he's had people, let's say, push the boundaries on him, but it doesn't have an impact on his performance.
Where do you think the Knights are then?
Probably at the moment, roughly where they sit on the ladder in the bottom part of the eight. I think the game footy after was a far better standard of game of football. The Roosters Melbourne, Melbourne and South. Probably the good thing for the Knights was they got, you know, their defense. They bounced back to being a good defensive unit. On the other side is their games at the moment. In the past 6 or 8 weeks, whenever they win, it's generally on the back of Kalen Ponga. So they probably need a bit of improvement from some other blokes with their offence to help them probably get if they're going to beat a Roosters or they're going to beat a Melbourne Storm or something. You can't just rely on Kalen, I suppose.
Speaking of toughness as well, Wade Graham, we called that game Gerds. Early in the first half, he copped a knock to the ribs and it looked like he could barely walk out there, and we kept thinking he's going to come off. Trainer kept going over to him. Ended up lasting pretty much the entire game. Came off with a couple of minutes to go and he said, yeah, it was a rib injury. Hopefully should be right for the next few weeks, but he was struggling big time, and I think Wade Graham epitomises toughness as well, and that's exactly what the Sharks needed. I mean, no, they didn't get the result, but I think he's an inspirational leader for them.
Yeah, Gerds, what did you like about the Knights?
Their defence was a lot better this week, and you could tell their attitude around their line speed. And Mitchell Pearce, who had a poor defensive performance against the Warriors last week, missed some 3 or 4 one-on-one tackles that led to tries, and you just don't see Junior do that too often. So he was always going to be good. I noticed his first couple of times he got the football, he ran the ball. So you always know when a half's on because, you know, they want to get involved and challenge and threaten the defensive line. And he did that early, so I knew that they were going to be good. Their back end of their sets was good. Their kicking game was exceptional, I thought, in the first half. And that was kind of the real difference. And Cronulla just offered them so many opportunities early. They couldn't complete a set. And Newcastle are just, even though I think their attack looks still clunky, they're not as connected as I've seen them over the last couple of years. They rely, you know, Kalen just sometimes just gets a football and scores tries out of nothing. And that'll work against some of the bottom of the eight sides potentially. But once you get up to the top sides, they're just not going to let, you know, Kalen Ponga, as good as he is, stroll through the middle of their defence on a regular basis like that to come away with easy points. So there's plenty to work on there for the Knights. But, you know, I generally don't think they're a threat at the back end of the season, to be honest. But they'll get their place in the eight and they might do some damage at the bottom at the early part of the finals. But I think there are a couple of rungs of the ladder behind, you know, those top sides.
Yeah, well, certainly one of those top sides is the Melbourne Storm. They look like getting into the top two for, I think, the fifth consecutive year, which is just remarkable. 22-16, they beat South Sydney. We'll get to that game next on the Saturday Scrum, thanks to King G.
The Triple M Saturday Scrum for King G, where comfort is king. Triple M rocks footy.
Nathan Brown, Emma Lawrence, Ryan Girdler, Tony Squires. The Storm too good for South Sydney, 22 points to 16. Cameron Smith was again terrific in the back end of that game, with some just terrific passes out of dummy half, as he has done for 1,000 years now. That's whether he's going to do it for 1,001 years. It seems to be the question rather than just the result of that game. There's been a statement released from the Melbourne Storm, Em?
Yes, they have just put out a little statement. Obviously, over the last few weeks, every time the Storm were up for media, everyone's asking about what Cameron is doing. But they've put out a statement saying, "We understand the enormous interest, but the entire organisation is very comfortable where the situation is at. When we have something further to say to fans and members, that's when they'll say it. Until then, Cameron's got an important job to do on the field. He's been an incredibly important part of their history and their entire football program. So basically, everyone, please just be patient, be respectful. Cameron, in time, will come up with a decision, which I think is totally fair. I think he's earned the right to take his time with it. It would be hard. So many players come out and say it took them a fair few months and they think about it, they change their mind a couple of times. So Cameron's not the only one, and even more so, I think, because he's arguably, well, he's one of the best players to have ever played the game. He's still playing so well. So it's a very difficult decision, and I agree. I think everyone needs to back off a little bit.
Well, certainly people aren't backing off, are they? The media is, you know, jumping in every interview. As soon as he got off the field, he was asked. That was the question he was asked. Yeah, and I guess you can understand it because of all those things. He is about to take be a part of a Melbourne Storm side for the fifth consecutive year to be in the top two. There's every chance they'll get to another grand final. There's every chance they'll win a grand final with him. Brownie, as a coach and as an administration, how much focus is already on next year in terms, so how important is what's going on, doing those numbers, the checks and balances, the guys and skivvies looking at what they can do?
Melbourne Storm would have two plans in place. They'd have a Cameron Smith playing plan and a Cameron Smith not playing plan. And that's probably why they're comfortable, because they know what they're doing. If Harry Grant does have the option in his contract where he becomes available if Cameron stays, it's not going to, if Harry Grant becomes available in 6 weeks' time, he's not going to be short of a club. There'll be plenty of clubs that'll make moves to try and get him into their roster. So that's not going to change anything from Harry Grant's point of view, if that's true. And at the end of the day, the only people that need to be comfortable here is Matt Tripp, the Storm owners, Craig Bellamy, the coach, and Cameron Smith. And if all those three people are satisfied, it doesn't really matter what anybody else thinks. So that's how Storm will look at it. But they'll have their contingency plans in place if Cameron's playing or not playing, and so they'll be planned either way. And, I mean, the hardest thing Cameron has, I think, I mean, I'm not in his shoes, obviously, but the fact he's playing so good and his legs still work good, it must be difficult. Like, why does he retire? Like, has he had enough of playing? Does he not want to achieve anymore? I don't know. But, you know, most players give it away because, one, they've had enough, or two, their body doesn't work anymore, which we'll talk about later on, some advice that Bill Walsh gave me, the 49ers coach years ago. Their body's no good, and that's when it's a problem for older players. When they try to play on and their body's no good, that's when they become, it becomes their form's nowhere near as good. But Cameron Smith's as healthy and playing as good as ever, so it must be a difficult thing for him to say, I'm not playing anymore.
And it looks to me like when you watch him closely on the field that he's really enjoying himself. He's there always to celebrate moments, and he's probably getting a lot of enjoyment out of this. These young guys that are coming through now, and young Pappenhausen, and watching these guys develop and being part of that development. So he probably gets different things from the game that he didn't get when he was younger that he really enjoys. And my personal feeling is that he wants to play on because he's still got, you know, the joy for the game and the ambition, and his body's in good shape, but he's being pressured now by the Harry Grant situation. And that's probably playing on his mind, knowing that if he can only give 1 year to the Storm that he's given, you know, his whole career to and so much service to, and he stops the Storm from having a 10, 12-year hooker, he's probably going to feel responsible for that decision. Yep. And that's probably weighing really heavily on him, because to me it looks like he can go another year. He's a unique individual in so many different ways. I remember the moment that I wanted to retire. It was the mental thing and it was the physical thing, and it was like, I'm done. If I hadn't have felt that and someone was putting pressure on me to say, look, we've got a young center coming through, and would have been hard for me to grapple with that decision. So I just think that it's taking his time because, as Brownie said before, he's not getting the signs that generally you get when you feel like you need to retire.
Yeah.
But there's other things that are making him feel like maybe he should retire.
Yeah. I don't get the sense just that the Storm are as desperate for that decision as it's painted from the outside. Certainly Craig Bellamy wasn't giving that impression when he spoke after the game. This is Craig Bellamy, the Melbourne coach.
He's finding it hard to make a decision by the sound of it, but for me, he deserves to, you know, have the time that he wants. You'd like to think that it's getting close. You know, and the club obviously would ideally like a decision, but at the end of the day, I'm not going to put any pressure on him. For what he's done for our club and what he's done for the game in general, I think he deserves to decide, you know, in his own time. As a club, you know, we would like the answer sooner rather than later, but like I said, I'm sticking to what I've said all along, that when he's ready to make a decision, he will, and I'll support him 100%.
He also wants to be able to, if he is going out, he wants to be able to announce it and have people, you know, celebrate the game.
Absolutely.
You know that that's the path he's going.
Some clubs do that really well, don't they?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, we'll get to that in a minute. McCarley has called 133353. G'day, McCarley.
Guys, thanks for having me on the show. I'm a Melbourne Storm supporter. I'm an AFL man that supported Storm ever since they came into the competition. And I'm very passionate about what they've brought to our state and the professionalism. As far as professionalism goes, they're the most professional organisation in this country. And the players that we've had come through that system, I tell you, and, you know, watching Cameron Smith last night, I almost brought a tear to my eye, to be honest, because I could see that he's actually struggling. You can see, a real man can actually see that the man is struggling with the decision, and the people that in Sydney don't understand the situation that Melbourne is in, the Victoria, the state is in. And, you know, I'm feeling that it'll be a great shame to lose him, you know, with all this pressure that's going on. Like, we'd love to keep him there forever, but he's got things to consider, like his kids going to school. They can't even go to school in Victoria at the moment.
Yeah.
You know, there is so much pressure externally that there's so many decisions he has to make. And I just think, hats off to him, that he could be so much, so awkward. The way he professionalism he has, the way he answered those questions last night, the way he handles himself after losses of grand finals. I just think it'd be great if he was Premier Victoria, to be honest.
He might have some supporters. Maybe that's what he's considering, big decisions for Cam.
And everyone thinks about, you know, the situation with Harry Grant and what he's going to bring. But what do you lose when Cameron moves on from your organisation as well? You don't just lose what you get on a weekly basis. You just get all those things that, you know, that Storms fan was just talking about.
McCarley, thanks for that call.
It's irreplaceable.
Absolutely. I love that passion from McCarley. Thank you so much. Just a couple of things just jumped in front of me here. Chad Townsend, the charge is in. Grade 3 shoulder charge. He'll miss 3 matches with the early guilty plea.
Three
matches. And you were saying, you know,
is that the end of that's the season, isn't it? Yeah. If they don't make the finals,
yep.
Very important player for the Sharks, Wade Graham.
Yep. That's Townsend. Chad. That's Chad Townsend. Wade Graham, grade 2, dangerous throw. He'll miss 2 weeks with an early guilty plea.
And so, Rudolph, will that come through at the moment? Because he's been one of their form players and was one of their best last night. So
as soon as we get that,
a couple of big outs there for the Sharks.
And their next 3 games too, Warriors. Who are in? They're the ones that can take that spot in the 8. Then the Roosters and the Raiders. So to be without key players for that.
Yeah, Toby Rudolph. Sorry, Em. Toby, no matches with an early guilty plea.
Okay. So. Well, I think he was sort of the guy that came in second, and I think Wade unfortunately was the one to get the hands between the legs and start the lifting motion. So Rudolph gets off, which is great news for the Sharks. But, yeah, the other two are going to be tough to swallow.
Yeah, look, we haven't even talked about South Sydney. If we get time, we'll come back to South and tell you how they are shaping up as they head into the 8 as well. There's another club that won't be in the top 8. They're called the West Tigers. Are they officially in crisis? Get there next on the Saturday Scrum.
The Triple M Saturday Scrum for King G, where comfort is king. Triple M rocks footy.
Game 2 this afternoon, Manly taking on the West Tigers at Lotto Land at 5:30. Both clubs seemingly missed an opportunity to play finals in this season. And for the West Tigers, that sadly has been the story for, a decade now. They just haven't been able to get the job done. Where do they go from here? How do they turn that corner so that they are a finals team? There seems to be a stack of problems on the field. Do they stretch beyond just the playing field, though? Let's have a little look at what we think about the West Tigers. Where does the problem start for you, Ryan Girdler?
Well, it's always not as it seems on the field. And I think it's unfair just to lump all the guilt and the blame on the playing group. If you look back at probably the last 7 or 8 years, they've had the Mick Potter incident. They've had the Taylor Farrar issue. They had the Ivan Cleary issue where he came in and left. Some of the retention and the recruitment decisions they've made probably in the last 4 or 5 years, the salary cap pressure that's left them under. And then to go out and get a coach who, you know, got a reputation of bringing a big stick just to fix all those problems, I think you know, it's a little unrealistic. I think they need to look from within and look at the organisation and ask themselves how they got into this position and make constitutional change. It's not just about, you know, what the players do on a weekly basis. And then they need to look at the detail about the relationships that, you know, the players and the coaching staff have, like, and look at the relationships they have with their senior players and some absolute legends and the way that they've been treated or mistreated at the back end of their careers. Yeah. It leaves it, from the outside looking in, it's left a lot to be desired in the way that they've treated, you know, Chris and Benji.
All right, yeah, that's the elephant in the room then, obviously, isn't it? Does it go from there? The fact that Benji Marshall, who was an absolute club legend, helped deliver a premiership in 2005, has played plenty of games. We know he'd already gone, but he'd come back playing on a comparatively small stipend, so 170-something thousand, I think it might be. Whatever that is, he's been told. In fact, sadly, it seems it's been reported, wasn't told by the club himself that he's not no longer wanted next year, but he found out in the media.
That's the part that I think is pretty disgraceful.
Mm-hmm.
It's not a matter of whether they should keep Benji or not. They've got Josh Reynolds, they've got Luke Brooks, they've got young guys like Jock Madden coming through. So I think whether or not they should keep Benji is a separate argument. But the fact that after everything that he has done for that club, he found out through the media, I think is very, very poor. And I think the club owed it to Benji to sit him down a couple of weeks ago or whenever it was that they had come to that decision or if they were leaning towards that decision, sit him down and say, this is probably where we're at. You can either make the decision to retire, give him time to his manager to look around at other clubs. So there are a few reports whether or not Benji's manager knew before this article came out. I think that that's irrelevant. It's not Benji's manager's decision to tell him. The manager works out all of the finer details. If a club wants a player, then the manager can work out those details. But after everything he's done, they needed to sit him down, have a conversation, you know, face to face and say, you've done a great, great, you've done great service for this club. You're not part of our plans. Let's try and work something out. Give you time to go elsewhere or... They needed to sit him down, and they didn't.
Can their salary cap be so twisted that they can't, you know, allow for a player, and he's still playing good footy. Obviously, his attacking prowess is still great. His defensive capability is probably less so. But is and on the amount of money he's paid, obviously, they've got a couple of other halves. Luke Brooks, who's being paid a lot of money. Josh Reynolds has been paid a lot of money. Do you think that they owe him anything in terms of that, or was it the approach that you didn't like?
I just think if the Tigers had their time again, they wouldn't have allowed the media to find out before the conversation was had with Benji. The fact that they've made a decision not to keep Benji, that's a coaching decision or a staff decision, which is fine. I don't think anyone can argue with that. And if Benji's up for a game somewhere else and someone else sees him as someone good to take to that club, great. But they obviously think Benji's been brought back to the Tigers. He's done the job they needed to do for a good cheap price. But I just think, if they had their time again, the Tigers, they probably would have handled it a little differently. That's all.
How deep did the problems run?
Well, it's not the first time that's happened with, you go back to even with the Robbie Farah incident, which you alluded to. I think many would argue, or you could sit either side of the fence, whether it was the right thing to let Robbie go or not. But I think, again, the Tigers would agree if they had their time over, they would have handled that differently because that wasn't handled well at all. They basically gave Jason Taylor the power to say, okay, you do what you want with the club, let Robbie go. But yet 4 months later, JT's gone as well. Like, that's just embarrassing.
I think to the young players too, and we know what they're trying to do, and everyone's talking about change at the Tigers, how they always come ninth. And I mean, it just sends a mixed message. If you've got, one of your longest serving players in Chris and Benji that's given the club the premiership and all that, and you're trying to talk about, loyalty and professionalism and all these things that you want these young guys to do, but that the young guys see the way some of these legends are treated by the club, what are they to believe?
Yeah.
What are they to think when they see Benji and Chris sort of being treated this way? And I agree.
Then they
Benji's
look at what's
defense,
going on in Melbourne with Cam
and then they
Smith.
See Sonny Bill and they see Cam Smith and they see these other clubs treating their legends like with the respect that they are. It's just I just think the Tigers at the moment just need to
If you look at the clubs,
makes a different change.
If you look at clubs like you talk about the at board level, administration level. If you look at Parramatta for years, Dennis Fitzgerald ran Parramatta, and he was a interesting character. Fitzgerald, he makes a big statement, but Parramatta were a club that he controlled the board. People couldn't wait to get Fitzy out. When they finally got Fitzy out, the board was a nightmare at Parramatta. It was all politics, and Parramatta were hopeless. They've finally got some stability back on the board again, and how's Parramatta going? Canterbury, how's Canterbury going since the Bullfrog passed away? All of a sudden, Bullfrog ran it with an iron fist, and now you got boards wanting to take people on and get people in and out. How's the great Canterbury club going? And then you go to the Tigers. People are always talking about the politics that goes on behind the scenes at the Tigers. And how's the Tigers last 9 or 10 years? So getting that part of your organisation in order certainly carries on down. And for the Tigers, they can put any coach in the Tigers. Michael Maguire's proven he's taken over Wigan, and Wigan had a squad that he took to a grand final. He took over South, to a grand final victory, sure, no bet. But he's taken over a squad where the highest paid players aren't their best players. And, you know, if you look at Joshy Reynolds, I like Josh. He's a great competitor, you know, but Josh doesn't make their team. Moses and Bai, they don't know where to play him. Russell Packer doesn't make the team. These are all the blokes that are on the biggest money. Now, if those blokes were in the team with the best players, the Tigers would be winning more games of footy. It's a simple case is getting your recruitment right and your roster management right, and that'll help as well. But until they fix up the politics at the top, it's always going to be hard for any coach, because Michael Maguire's a very good football coach.
Well, that's still a hard fix then, isn't it, for next season for the Tigers?
It can't be fixed next season. You can only move players that other clubs will take. And this is what happens when things don't go well for a footy club and players are signed, and then the coach leaves or the coach is sacked and the next bloke comes in, and it just ends up a vicious cycle. And that's the Tigers have found themselves in that cycle of just keeping on sacking coaches all the time. And now Madge is there. The last thing they could do would be move Madge out. That would be the disaster for them.
But it seems to be that just a recurring theme of what they're doing, get into crisis, get rid of the coach. But whether no matter how experienced you are as an administrator, it's something pretty simple, Gerds, which you talked to that about respect. I mean, I don't think you really need to be a genius to work out the way that you need to treat people. And I think that's what they're missing. And that's what people want to go to a club if that's what they're getting. Well, there's genuine respect.
Coaches have different philosophies around it, and a lot of people always resort back to the good old days. The coach is the coach, and the players just need to do what they're told. Other coaches, and I look at the more recent ones that have had success in guys like Robinson, obviously Wayne Bennett and Craig Bellamy, and you talk to any of their players, and their players absolutely love them. They love them. So they've earned the right, by building relationships, to have honest conversations with players, and I think that's really important. Now, people might say that Madge sort of is a little bit out of the Craig Bellamy sort of mold, where he blows up and he kicks chairs and he does things. Has he got the relationship with the players that the players understand what that means? Because I know when Bellamy does it, all the players, they know what that means, because he's built the relationships, and you know they love going into battle for Billy Ake. And I think those relationships take time. You look at Robbo and the way that he behaves with his players. They can be getting beat by the Gold Coast by 20 points, and he's calm, and he's measured in the way that he delivers, you know, his message at halftime or whatever. And Wayne's pretty much always the same. So they all have their own method. But I think the key thing, and you spoke about respect, is having relationships, especially with your core senior group.
Much harder, though, for Madge at a club that's a losing club than a club that's in the top four every year, too. Don't be fooled by that, neither. Like, it's much easier for Madge to be given a Benji Marshall bad news, but we're running fourth, everyone's got faith in where you're going, as opposed to a club that's down up high. You know, if clubs are consistently at the top, they're consistently at the top because the players have a lot of faith. But when you're trying to change something like the Tigers, it's not as easy a task as what everyone thinks.
I think in terms of it came out, there were reports earlier in the week that the players had this honesty session with Madge and said they were walking on eggshells. But all of a sudden then, you know, it was debated heavily on 360 and all throughout the week. And the narrative kind of changed and saying the players are soft and they don't like Madge's coaching style and that he's too tough and they train too hard. But that's... No, none of the players ever came out and said that. No players, not one player has come out. I mean, I know there were issues with Ryan Madison and he he voiced concerns about that, but no players have come out and said Madge was too tough. So the narrative kind of changed a bit. The players in that honesty session were simply saying they felt as if one bad performance, they felt as if they were going to be dropped. They never had an opportunity to fix it, which, I mean, if you were in that position, would you feel, how would you be playing if you thought one bad performance was... That's what they were saying. It's not
never
that,
gave a bad performance. Yeah, look, right.
But you know what I mean? For example, Adam O'Brien said during the week he needed to give the players a chance to fix what they'd done, right? So that's all the players had voiced, that they were a bit worried and felt like from one bad performance they were losing their spot. They've never come out and said, oh, we're training too hard, and all of a sudden the narrative has turned to the playing group is soft and they don't like Madge training too hard. No one... came out and said that.
I think Madge's biggest issue, though, was the fact that the Tigers players, this is from an outsider and just watching his press conferences, his biggest issue was, from what I feel he was talking about, was we get up and we play good against sides higher on the table, but then we perform poorly against sides we're supposed to beat. And that is just purely based on a player's mind and preparation in his mind. And I think that's what was ticking him off the most. And some of these players that were turning up and not putting in the same performance against those sides are the ones that have the biggest contribution to the rest of the group. And I think that's what his beef was. That's reading between the lines. I'm only guessing that.
But what's a priority for you, Brownie? Like when you get into an organisation like that and you're going to go through this, I mean, you know, some of the coaches talk about, you know, developing men and being a mentor. And so if you're in there developing men and getting the best out of them, not just on the football field, but on a weekly basis within their lives and education, because these guys are in their 20s, they earn a lot of money and a lot of them are looking for mentors and things at that certain age. You know, is it easier to go down that path of looking after that side of it and then knowing that if you develop a good man, well, toughness and resilience and responsibility and accountability comes with developing a man as opposed to, I don't know, just trying to get the best out of him on a footy field?
I think each player has a different feel for each player. Unless you're actually at a club, it's easy to comment from the outside, but unless you're actually in there, it's hard to comment, honestly, because I don't know Moses Mbai. I don't know a lot of these players. I've seen them play footy.
But you acknowledge that. So when you get in there, you look at the different individuals and then you take a course of action with all of that?
They're all different, aren't they? All players are different, you know. And I think what the Tigers are deciding is it doesn't matter who the coach is, they keep running ninth.
Yep.
Don't they? Now Ivan Cleary is at Penrith now and they're running first. You know, so unfortunately Mick Potter hasn't coached again and Jason Taylor, those guys haven't coached again, but nothing's changing there at the moment, is it? So maybe more stability at the top and support the coach a little longer and get a few things right, and you might see the Tigers actually get ahead of that ninth position.
I've just got to jump at, I think Dirk has got to jump out of the car in a second. He's a long-suffering Tigers fan, has given us a call. G'day, Dirk.
Oh, hi, guys. How's it going?
Yeah, well, what are your thoughts?
Oh, look, I am a long-suffering Tigers fan, and just from a recruitment perspective, some names that may be familiar in other teams, Pappenhausen, Addo Carr, Fifita, Tedesco, Moses. Here are some of the people the Tigers decided not to prioritise keeping. And instead, some of the players we do have is Moses Mbai. Look, he's a good player for Queensland, but I'm not sure what he's done for the Tigers. I like Benji Marshall, but I do agree with the decision to move him on. I'm just looking at his defence. I think he's been a tremendous servant to our team. But the recruitment of our team in the last 10 years has been eye-watering. And I think someone needs to take account for that.
All right. Thank you, Dirk.
Well, you pointed to the fact, Brownie, yes, okay, and Dirk made the point. Some players potentially, I mean, Moses Mbai, Russell Pack, even Chris McQueen was on quite a bit of money. But again, who ticks off and who signs off on all of this? At an administrative level, over the last, 7 or 8 years, we've had players come and go, we've had coaches come and go, but it's still the same theme, isn't it? Yeah. So, I mean, we see it at other clubs too, then the board aren't held accountable, are they?
To defend the Tigers here, I'm not sure they told they would have said to James Tedesco, "We don't want you."
No, I'm pretty confident.
I'm pretty confident James Tedesco had a call from the Roosters and thought, "I can go and play with 8 or 10 Origin and Test players, or I can stay here at the Tigers."
That's absolutely true. Time is just rushing away from us. We do have a little Benji Marshall quiz to get to in a moment, if we even have time before the top of the hour. This is the Saturday Scrum. So much ahead of us in the 2 hours we get to share. Stick around.
The Triple M Saturday Scrum for King G, where comfort is king. Triple M rocks footy.
Brownie M, good. Tony with you on Saturday afternoon. It is time for a little bit of this action.
Ladies and gentlemen,
three in five.
I love Tony's sessions. I love the 3 and 5.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12. 3 and 5.
Yeah, once again. It's not really a 3 and 5. It's a quiz. It's a quiz where you're going to have to use your names as your buzzers. Wouldn't mind testing those for me, please.
Gary.
Oh, no.
Ryan.
And
Brownie.
Beautiful.
No, I'm Emma.
You're Gary. We've tested your buzzer.
Gary
and that's
Lawrence.
How it works.
No, only your old man. He'd be proud.
He wouldn't be proud.
Have loved the Gazza.
I thought we maybe should do, given we've just been speaking about the Tigers, just speaking about Benji Marshall. Just a quick Benji Marshall quiz.
Benji Marshall quiz.
We're ready to go. Okay. Em, you should be all over this. Mm. All right.
Ladbrokes have got M favourite on.
Yeah, I think they have. Question number one, how old is Benji?
Gary. 35.
Gary. Correct. What's his middle name?
Brownie. No idea.
Yes, Brownie.
No idea.
What's that?
What is Benji's middle name? Benji Quentin Marshall.
Oh,
name three NRL teams.
Yeah. Gary.
Benji, what's my name again? I was in first.
Right. Did you say Gary then?
You didn't say anything.
I think I said Benji.
Dragons, anyway. Tigers, Broncos.
Correct. Benji played 6 games for which New Zealand? Ryan.
The Blues.
Correct. Well played, New Zealand rugby team. Who did Benji play his 250th NRL game? Yes, Ryan.
The Broncos.
Incorrect. Let me finish the question. Who did Benji play his 250th NRL game against?
Oh, that's a shocking question.
No, it's not a shocking question. Not a... The answer's shocking, though. Yes?
Gary.
Yes, Gary.
West Tigers?
No, he played it. Yes, he did. Against the Tigers for the Dragons.
Yeah, but
correct.
You said against.
Yes, yes. No, you're correct. 2005, we go back there. The famous grand final winning flick.
Gary.
Yes. Brownie.
The winger, what's his name?
Oh, the winger. You know what the question's going to be.
What's his name, the winger?
You know what the question is, right?
Blake,
right.
Paddy Richards. Paddy Richards.
That's correct.
The question was, who was the pass to? Pat Richards is
the player. You didn't even buzz in.
Yeah.
You didn't even buzz in.
No, but he clicked and I looked.
Yeah,
it's okay.
That's good.
Who did Benji and his New Zealand side beat to win the 2008 World... Yes, Ryan?
The World Cup?
Yes. Who did they beat?
They beat Australia in the
final. Correct. They did beat Australia. And what year did he win the Golden Boot?
That was Ryan, 2006.
8.
Want to go a couple more?
11.
2010.
Ooh.
All right, then your final question. Em, I think you've already got this, but I'll throw it all on this. Have a listen to this song from 2013 and tell me who Benji is singing about.
Then you came around one day to say, Benji, I like you, but I have to go away. Bad news, for the Sharks now I'm going to play. I say, forget you, you walk out, you
It was on the Footy Show. There's a hint.
What year was it?
It was in 2013.
2013.
Keep listening if you like.
Oh. Bo?
Bo
Ryan.
Bo Ryan is correct, even though you didn't buzz in.
Because he had to go to the Sharkies.
Correct.
And so did Chris Hynington.
There you go. That is the correct answer.
I don't know if they were treated very well, some of the players that left back then, but, I mean, we won't dig the boot in anymore, will we?
Wow, you're still going.
Get into it, man.
Nice leg slipper.
Love it, Em. Yeah.
Nice
well done. We're going to speak to Ryan Pappenhausen very shortly. Andrew Abdo will also join us. Sterlo's in at 2 o'clock. This is the Saturday Scrum. We're doing it for King G.
Triple M rocks the NRL 24/7 through the Triple M app. Thanks to Ream. Steady, hot and strong. Install a Ream.